The monologue.
Nurses at Seattle Children's Hospital, they picketed earlier today. They are upset with a lack of progress on a new contract. They're asking for better working conditions. What does that actually mean? More money. That's what they're asking for. Now, their complaints are fully valid. There is no doubt about it. There is a staffing shortage, and it has caused significant problems for the nurses who work there. Here's Edna Cortez. She's with the union. She is a long-time nurse speaking to Cairo 7 TV.
So one of the things, we're short staffing. We are over 400 nurses short in this hospital. So a lot of nurses are working overtime. And with a lot of overtime, yes, that is money. But there's a lot of us that are really tired. We want to go home. We want to be with our families, but we're tired. And a lot of us are not getting paid what we deserve.
Now, I totally understand that perspective. I get it. But this is a problem that the hospitals and the state created. A huge part of the staffing shortage has to do with the vaccine mandate. They can pretend all they want that it had no role to play. They can pretend that all they want. But the fact of the matter is, nurses, and I'm talking not necessarily about Seattle Children's, but across the state, nurses left over the mandate. They did not want to be a part of a system that forces them into a private medical decision that they don't think was right for them. And so a lot of this had to do with a reality that was created, or at the very least, made worse. Now, the union says they've had 9 bargaining sessions over the last 4 months. Their children's still too far apart. They say the negotiations have stalled and something needs to give. Here's the reality. Because I don't like these kinds of stunts, and sometimes they are all too happy and quick to use it.
The interview.
It was yet another instance of hypocrisy coming from city leaders on the topic of homelessness. And for my next guest, who wishes to remain anonymous, it drove him over the edge. And he joins me now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So you had an interesting encounter that you were able to film with a parking enforcement officer. I'll let you take it from there.
So I've been having this issue with Seattle parking enforcement. We just, as citizens here, we walk around, we see our cars get ticketed, and yet around the same block, you'll see a bunch of RVs, a bunch of abandoned vehicles, a bunch of drug abuse, just a bunch of crime everywhere. Yet there's no repercussions for them. And I happened to catch one of these parking enforcers in the middle of trying to ticket a citizen there. I approached her saying, "Hey, so why are you giving us tickets but won't approach these RV people?" And she cuts me off saying, "This car's parked illegally." I'm like, "Wait a minute. If this car's parked illegally, what's the car down the street then?" And then just we say, "It's not my job." I'm like, "Okay, then what's the difference then?" So you're saying you're going to ticket all these normal people who will pay a ticket, who's paying your salary, but you won't get the actual issue here. And they're not doing anything about it. This pisses me off.
I bet.
Seattle was great 10 years ago.
Yep.
Before all this BS, but now it's like, it's crap.
Why do you think it's turned so dramatically different? Because you're talking about, in this case, Inner Bay, but I mean, this is an issue that has hit Seattle across the city.
Definitely because all these new transplants bringing their beliefs and everything, their views of life over to Washington and Seattle especially, and then now Seattle becoming more of a liberal city. It's always been like that, but it became progressively worse and worse. I know there's been measures where people want to clean up the city of Seattle. I voted for that, and then next you know, they canceled it because it was considered inhumane or whatever to get Seattle cleaned up. I feel like these people who commit these crimes, the homeless, are just getting more rights than actual citizens, and we're paying for it.
Yeah.
And I keep hearing moved away.
Yeah, and I keep hearing more and more folks speaking up in significant ways. You're obviously amongst them, but it sounds like you're still scared, like so many others, to be too public about this. I mean, you want to stay anonymous for what reason?
Oh, the culture right here. Yeah. They figure out who I am. They're going to dox me. We live in a society, or this city lives in a society where if you stand up for your rights as an American, they're going to if you don't believe what you're saying, they're going to find you, and they don't want to get you fired, they want you to lose your job, they don't want to get you kicked out. They want to silence you. You know, that's how the liberals do it. That's how Democrats do it. different.
How many people in your community generally feel that same way, regardless of the politics of it all, just feel like things are getting out of control, but they're not comfortable speaking up?
Oh, everyone. Everyone in the neighborhoods are tired of it. We're tired of seeing our cars get broken into. We're tired of these homeless people stealing stuff, and the cops not doing anything about it because they really can't. And we're tired of getting assaulted by, getting fined by the city of Seattle for just living our lives. And we're tired of this crime just happening over and over again. It's getting worse.
So why do you think things haven't changed at this point? I mean, because I hear you, and I hear a lot of people that say exactly what you say, and yet it feels like the same people continue to get put into office, or the same version of that same kind of council member or mayor.
Life's a circle. They don't want change. They don't want things to be fixed. They want their policies and whatnot. That way they can be in control of everyone. That's what I feel like.
What do you think it'll take to get to that point where we see some fixes?
To be honest, it might take a tragedy or something. The last time we actually had something nothing relevant to the city, we had the riots. We had the BLM riots and stuff. And from there, it only got worse and worse for the city. It got stricter and stricter. Yeah. So I don't know what it takes for us actual citizens who care about the city for a bigger change.
Do you think Seattle is savable?
Not at this rate. People are moving out of Seattle.
Yeah.
But the ones that are moving out are people who want change. And what's left is another California or San Francisco.
What about you? Have you thought about moving?
Fortunately, I'm tied to the city so long that I don't want to move away. Still have hope for the city, but deal with the BS best way you can,
Yeah, no kidding. And sometimes it just means turning a spotlight on it, which your video clearly has done. We posted it up at ktth.com for anyone who wants to check it out. It's been spreading pretty significantly today, and I hope it continues to. It is important to highlight the hypocrisy. Other than some snarkiness coming from the parking enforcement officer, she's not to blame. It's a city issue. The city is to blame.
She did her job well. I unfortunately had to just attack her on her BS because she did her job right. Unfortunately, they're not teaching her anything right. She knows she's being lied to, and she has to do her best. So she didn't do anything wrong, but her job is wrong. What the city is doing to us is wrong.
No kidding. And by the way, it's always easy to pick on parking enforcement officers, even during good times.
She stood her ground really well. Let's be honest with her.
She did. She very clearly did. It's great video. It's compelling video. And it's video, I think, that needs to be seen. So check it out over at ktth.com. I really do appreciate you coming on and sharing your perspective. And we'll continue to do what we can to highlight what Seattle has become. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate your time, Jason.
Now this.
The interview.
Yet another set of businesses dealing with situations that they shouldn't have to, not in a supposedly world-class city. In this case, you've got a business in Seattle that is effectively being terrorized by a mini homeless encampment. In this case, it's actually just one tent. Well, when you find out what it is the guy inside is allegedly up to, you're probably going to be as upset and alarmed as the people who have to experience this. Joining me on the line is Trevor Boone. He's the co-owner of Emerald City Guitars. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thank you so much, Jason.
You sent me a text earlier today, and I know, Trevor, we've chatted before. You sent me a text with some photos after a cleanup you had to do because of the homelessness situation. Take us through what happened.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is an everyday situation, essentially. Came into the shop this morning, opening our, we're boarded up, we're gated up, and, trying to get to our gate, and there's a tent with copious amounts of garbage and trash and toilet paper and drug paraphernalia all spread out. It's 9:30 a.m., and so I go check, kind of look into this tent, and there's a lady in there. One of my employees said, yeah, there's been a bunch of people kind of coming in and out this morning, kind of waiting for me to get there. And I'm start cleaning all this stuff up, trying to move it to the Compass Center, to the alley, and asking if I can assist helping move this tent. That's when the person got kind of, hysterical and kind of, just inappropriate and crazy. So I kind of stepped back and we began calling the police. it took 2 hours for them to show up. We sat out there for 2 hours, and it really escalated when my neighbor, who also is works next door, was saying that the Gallon side was showing bullets and doing gestures as far as like shooting gestures and showing, you know, live rounds of ammunition out of this tent in front of my shop.
So not alarming at all.
Yeah, I mean, we get tourists from all over the world. One of the main vintage shops, and people come here to see us with their kids, you know, men, women, all everybody, and it's humiliating, you know. So I'm waiting for the police, and they actually showed up, 3 hours later. And when I discussed it with them, I said, listen, I've got employees trying to come in. I've got customers trying to come in. I already cleaned the trash. I'm not worried about that. I'm not trying to, you know, but there's a gal in there showing live, you know, and bullets to people getting in the shop and whatnot. And I don't know I assume she's got a gun. If she's got bullets, I don't know. I don't want to move the tent by myself. And what can I do here? And the two officers said there is nothing they can do. She can have a tent there and she can have a gun in there. They can't search the tent. They can't do anything. And I know their hands are tied. I respect our officers. I would, you know, obviously wish they were more available, but they simply kind of said howdy howdy to her and asked her if she could move down the block. Obviously she was intoxicating, kind of rattling off random stuff. You know, they took off after a couple of minutes, but for me, you know, paying taxes and cleaning our own front steps every day, we're one of the last businesses who are trying to stick it out in Seattle. And what do we do here? You know, I can't open my door. I've got female employees. I've got all age employees who are getting parking tickets nonstop, but we can't get in the shop because somebody's got, you know, they're shooting up, they're smoking meth, and they've got bullets. What else do they have in there, you know?
Yeah,
so it's frustrating, man. You know?
I imagine it's frustrating. As you said, you're a taxpayer, you're a small business owner, you're trying to deliver a product to customers, but also provide a life for your staff who want to come to work, you know, and not be harassed.
Yeah, and it's, you know, again, we've been here 26 years. I mean, when I was a kid, this was opening up, we went to the Union Gospel Mission and played music. We did food drives for the homeless, you know, and now it's just an entirely different type of person. It's extreme drug use, extreme violence. And we see people get assaulted constantly. Our neighbors getting, you know, replacing windows constantly from, you know, drive-bys and gang fights and whatnot. And we've had to hire our own, you know, private police or, you know, security to stay the night at the shop and keep an eye when we have big threats of people taking pictures of our locks and whatnot. That alone will, you know, bankrupt a company trying to pay for three guys to stay the night at your shop so you don't have organized crime break in. You know, it's just impossible. I always loved Seattle. I was proud to live here. I moved out a year ago and I'll never be coming back. And you know, but we've been here so long and we try to kind of create our own world in here, but it is, I'm seriously worried for, you know, the rest, obviously the business owners of whoever's left, you know, about three places, but, it was a flourishing neighborhood. Now it's just absolutely, you know, crime ridden and it's disgusting.
What have the conversations been like with the city if they've taken place at all?
You know, I was part of the Pioneer Square Alliance and I was going to meetings. This is 4 or 5 years ago. And I went to several meetings with, there'd be 100 people in here, you know, in the meetings from all over the businesses shouting, trying to get resolution for the same thing I'm talking about today. Insane crime, break-in, drug use, shootings, stabbings. And city council would come and there were zero answers. It was the most depressing thing I've ever seen. I mean, just absolutely heartbreaking to see all my peers and businesses down here trying to get any help at all. Mm-hmm. I sat down with Mayor Durkin one-on-one while ago, and that same deal, you know, no answers and the hollow promises. And I eventually stopped going to all those meetings just because it was going nowhere. Police don't really have an answer. They haven't had for a while because their hands are tied. We know that. You know, I mean, I can't get a cop to show up for a possibly armed, you know, suspect outside for 3 hours while I'm trying to open my shop, but somebody falls down, twists their ankle. There's four ambulances here, you know, in 2 seconds. And it's just like, it's really, really hard to see.
Why do you stay?
You know, it's a little bit of a pride thing. We, again, a family business. We've been here for almost 30 years. I feel in my bones, I want to keep it going. And when people do come to Seattle, I feel like we're maybe one of the only, you know, old businesses that people can come. And I love having that. There's the concerts that go downtown that we hope to get a little bit of folks and musicians coming to our shop. But I question that every day. It's kind of like, when's the tipping point? Mm-hmm. I feel like I've been tipped over many times. And, you know, we've seen the fluctuations after 30 years. You see, slight ups and downs. I haven't seen the up for so long. I just do not see it turning around. You know, again, we're gated up, boarded up. We escort customers to our shop and oftentimes to their car. It's a lot of explaining to do. And mm-hmm. again, embarrassment when people come down here. And I mean, people are shocked. They can't believe it. It's really.
Well, you take pride. You take pride in your business. And yeah, this is an example of how the city doesn't take pride in its services, in how it looks to taxpayers, in how it is presented to tourists. It's disgusting. I'm sorry you're going through this. I wish you obviously the best of luck over at Emerald City Guitars. I hope people support you if they're in the market for some of these vintage. If you're a musician and you're looking for vintage equipment, please check them out. Emerald City Guitars, again, in Pioneer Square. Although maybe they should go online. Do you have
what's the website? Man, we'll get you in here. And, you know, we've really had to, like you said, pivot and figure out for these awesome customers who are loyal and make their way down here and brave the elements. We've got you. We will get you in here. But, yeah, you know, it's where we're at. We go up and down the West Coast a lot looking for old guitars, you know, California, Portland, and I've seen it all. I truly believe Seattle is the worst of all the West Coast cities, and I do that drive 10 times a year. And every time I come back here, my heart breaks.
Well, I'm sorry you're going through this. I really am. We'll have some photos of what's going on online on our Twitter feed as well as KTTH.com. Trevor Boone, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, sir. Take care, man.
Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke the story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion. Jason, definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
What we saw happen last night in Mar-a-Lago shows a terrifying abuse of power. It's disturbing, and it has to be called out. But what ultimately can be done? Joining me on the line is Matt Schlapp. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you, Jason. I'm as troubled as you are.
Take us through when you first found out about this. What went through your mind?
You know, we're on the airplane leaving Dallas where you were with us at CPAC. And, you know, Trump had given such a great speech and we had portrayed for 3 days how America's under attack. And I said to Mercy on the plane, I was like, it just went so smoothly. It went so well. You know, they weren't able to pull it down. And then hours later, when we landed, I saw that Mar-a-Lago had been raided. I reached out to the president. He called me back and we both agreed CPAC was too good. He gave a great speech. We, portrayed the fact that the American people are onto their abuse of power. And I think they view him as gaining too much momentum. I mean, whether you're for Trump or just for his policies, they're trying to shut the guy down, and every time he puts his head up, they seem to attack him.
All of the reporting still is basically confirming that this had to do with documents. That's it. Which they could have received via a subpoena. They did not have to do a raid this. But this feels intentional, right? I mean, this was, and you point this out in a piece that's up right now at FoxNews.com, this is what it means to see a politicized FBI.
Yeah, no, they're trying to scare us. And this is something, we asked a question on our straw poll and we said, you know, what's America's biggest threat? Threats from without, like Putin and China, Xi, or threats from within? And 91% of the people there said threats from within. It's the deep state. It's the corruption. It's the abuse of power. And then the FBI, unfortunately, proved all of our worst fears right. Jason, they're trying to silence us. Silencing can take place with being canceled on Facebook or social media. Silencing can take place with your getting debanked or you lose your job because you go to a church that they don't like or you wear a MAGA hat. But silencing can also be they're going to audit you with these new IRS agents like Obama did with Lois Lerner. They're going to follow you and spy on you like they did with Trump and reporters under Obama. I mean, this is the silence the majority of the American people who are just disgusted by these socialist policies.
And it doesn't seem like this is being taken seriously by a lot of folks in the media on the left. And I get that they don't like Trump, but it feels like they should acknowledge this kind of politicization can have serious blowback. At some point, hopefully very soon, Republicans will be in charge. Now, obviously, I don't want to see them abuse the systems, but it's very easy to feel like there's going to be retribution for this.
Yeah, so I put a tweet out. You know, you burn down cities, you kill 24 people in a BLM t-shirt, and the future vice president springs you out of jail. You take over the Wisconsin Capitol for days and days and threaten lawmakers, and Rachel Maddow treats you as a hero.
Yep.
You know, if you're on our side and you're someone like Donald Trump, you support Donald Trump, and you just want to advocate for him and his policies, even if you were there on J6, you got 18 months of solitary confinement. We've already had some person commit suicide because they broke. You know, there's two systems of justice. I was in that crowd when the president had to be moved to the bunker. I talked about it at CPAC. You know, it was complete lawlessness, no cops, and nobody was held accountable.
No one's ever held accountable on the left, it feels like, certainly over the course of the last few years. Just joining us, we're talking with Matt Schlapp. He, of course, is the chairman of CPAC. He is the author of The Desecrators. We're talking about last night's raid on President Trump's home in Florida. Although Morning Joe today explained that it wasn't actually a raid. So I guess we're now redefining what a raid is.
You know, Morning Joe used to come to CPAC, Jason. Yep. He had a pretty good voting record with us. You know, I don't know whether it's Trump derangement syndrome or what. You know, he's the person who first asked me, not on air, to get involved with Trump, that he thought Trump would make a great president. And then somehow their relationship soured. And now he acts like Trump is Hitlerian. And I wonder why he thought Trump was fine before, when he was right in the middle of it all.
Mm-hmm.
This is all Trump derangement syndrome. And like I said, I like Trump. Other people don't like him as much as I like him, but you know, his policies were overwhelmingly popular. He was a tonic on the political system. And, you know, the more they go after him, the more they make us want him back, the more they resurrect him. Especially juxtapose it to all the pain coming from these Biden policies. You know, fascism in the end never works with the people, because they always turn against those fascistic leaders. And I don't know what Biden's plan is, but he's not calling the shots anyway.
Yeah, no kidding. What do you think this is going to do in the hunt for this red wave in the midterms? Obviously, today we've got a number of primaries: Connecticut, Vermont, Wisconsin, Minnesota. In Wisconsin, in particular, people are paying attention to, and I don't know if this is a fair way to assess the campaign for governor on the Republican side, you know, a Trump-backed candidate versus a Pence-backed candidate. I actually think they're both pretty good. I would go with the Trump-backed candidate in this particular case. But how much do you think this is going to impact the races?
I just think, you know, I think we're going to add more House seats to our tally. I think more people who maybe aren't that political realize how obnoxious these socialists are. I think Trump's endorsement in primaries, it can't defy gravity, but it is the most important political dynamic I've ever seen in politics. I mean, I've seen presidents and former presidents get involved in primaries, and usually presidents don't really have coattails. They can't make that big an impact. Trump can change a race overnight. It can't change every race, but it can change so many races overnight. And the fact is this, Jason, you saw it. There is an unbreakable bond between Trump and conservative activists. He said he would do these things. They didn't know if he'd really do them. Then he did them. And now they see him being persecuted, and they wonder, who could put up with all this out there? You know, he might be just a unique person in politics.
He certainly is. What do you think this does to his brand in particular? Because I argued yesterday and again earlier this morning on Newsmax, if this is truly 100% solely about documents, all this does is push people into his camp that otherwise would not go there naturally. Because this would be a very clear example of politicization over the line that none of us, Democrats, independents, and Republicans, would want to be a part of.
I think the issue is this, which is, it's either documents that they claim you shouldn't have taken from the White House, remember, the Clintons stole $200,000 yeah. worth of art and furniture from the White House, and that was fine. They just had to return it. There were no subpoenas. No one raided their property. They just stole from the American people, and that's okay. They had to write a check for $23,000 or something. I mean, that was all fine. It's all about paper. They could just go get the paper, as you brought up in the beginning. To me, this is deeper. This is going to be about the idea that if you believe election laws should be followed in these big, broken, blue, bankrupt cities, all run by the left, if you think voter ID should be followed, you're an insurrectionist. And they're going to try to find evidence that Donald Trump is an insurrectionist simply because he believed that you shouldn't have fraudulent voting. And if he goes to prison for that, they should put me in prison, too, because I'll fight to the death to make sure that we have fair voting. If we don't have fair voting, Jason, we're going to have a civil war, and I don't want to see it. I don't want to see the violence that will erupt if this is the path we're on.
Well, hopefully we see no violence. Hopefully we see no jail time, but hopefully we do see the actual documents that went into this decision and hear from the decision makers. They owe it to the American people to go this far. We've been talking with Matt Schlapp from CPAC, the website conservative.org, if you want to learn how you can get more involved. And we need to get more involved. Matt Schlapp, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason.
Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
Well, Dave Ross from our sister station, Cairo News Radio, does a daily commentary. And his commentary that aired today was on an excerpt from a forthcoming book about the Trump administration, and it is not in any way supportive of Trump, written by authors who are not fans, featuring a bunch of people who don't like it. And so it's one of the many hit pieces and critical pieces that is meant to not just embarrass the president, but try to make it so that he doesn't run again and doesn't have the support to run again. Perhaps that's what was behind yesterday's Mar-a-Lago scenario. But Dave decided in his piece to call out Trump supporters, comparing them to Nazis. And he doesn't do it directly. He does it in a very indirect way, but it doesn't change the fact that he views Trump supporters as Nazis, or at least some of them as Nazis.
If you want a spellbinding read that will keep your mind off the heat, it's the New Yorker article about Trump and his generals. It quotes the latest book by Susan B. Glasser and Peter Baker, who write that Trump once asked his chief of staff why his generals weren't like the German generals in World War II, loyal to their leader. It also quotes a resignation letter written by General Mark Milley, who headed the Joint Chiefs of Staff, accusing his boss of embracing the tyranny, dictatorship, and extremism that members of the military had sworn to fight against.
Now, I'll finish some of it in a second, but let's give you some context here that doesn't appear in this commentary against Donald Trump. President Trump was upset that people were fighting him, resisting him, and undermining him, something that we know as a matter of fact occurred. In fact, when you go ahead and read the resignation letter of General Milley, you realize that he was not a believer in the political realities of the Trump presidency, and he decided not to resign because he wanted to stay in power to quite literally undermine the president. Now, I know that it gets framed in this heroic way. Oh, he stood by because he wanted to make sure that the president didn't go too far. That's not how our military works. That's not how our system works. You don't get, as a general, to decide what is or is not right or constitutional or wise. That is not your decision. Part of it, he goes in to talk about how the president was trying to politicize the military. Oh, really? Politicize the military? We currently have a commander-in-chief who's ruling over an administration whose military members have to be taught the right personal pronouns to use, have to read books about white fragility and white rage. That's not political, though. That's not political.
But General Milley never sent that letter, yeah, deciding instead that he had to stay on to prevent a civil war.
Oh, he's such a hero. He prevented a civil war, because that was actually a thing. Republicans were just getting ready to go at it with the Democrats. Oh, it was the other way around? Democrats turning violent against conservatives? Oh, okay.
And there's no indication that Trump has mellowed since then. Last night, this text message popped up on my phone from President Trump. Quote, Mar-a-Lago was raided. America is corrupt. We must return power to the people. Will you fight with me? Followed by the usual donation link. But what makes this all so important is that just as he hasn't mellowed, neither have his supporters. And that's where his power comes from. His supporters have stuck with him, despite the January 6th hearings, despite the criminal investigations, despite the many literary colonoscopies probing his administrative incontinence. They see him as a victim. Some of them are online this morning, predicting civil war. There's a significant segment of the electorate hungry for a little tyranny as the only way to finally Christianize America and cleanse it of liberal wokeism. And for them, the tell-all books and the January 6th witnesses only prove what Trump has consistently said, that the deep state was always out to undermine him. And because his critics are doing all they can to make him look feckless, I think we all know that if he comes back to the White House, he will come back angrier than ever.
So the framing of this, of course, is through the lens of being anti-Trump. You say that despite the January 6th hearings, the Trump supporters haven't moved, right? Correct. Because the January 6th hearings are not your traditional hearings. You're not hearing both sides. You're not getting Republican pushback. You got the two people who loathe Donald Trump, one of whom is retiring from Congress, the other whom is about to get trounced in her reelection campaign because she doesn't actually support the will of the people. You had the Democrats in power saying no to the people that the Republicans wanted to appoint to the committee to ensure that it would be done fairly. Correct. People aren't moved by that if they're Donald Trump fans because they know that it's political theater, which you know, of course, but you choose to pretend otherwise. Oh, there were some tell-all books told totally through objective lenses. Uh-huh. Got it. He's being criminally investigated. Okay, so is Hunter Biden. Well, Hunter Biden and Joe Biden probably should have been, but they managed to escape that somehow leading into the election. And now Joe Biden pretending that he never had any conversations with his son about his business dealings, even though we now have audio evidence that that was a lie. We also have emails that prove that that was a lie, or text messages that prove that it was a lie. And really, I don't hear much coming from Dave Ross on that, because Dave Ross, like so many other left-wing voices in the media, are singularly focused on Trump. They do not like him. They do not want him in power. And so to compare the loyalty of Trump supporters to Trump in the context of Trump wanting loyalty from his generals like they did in Nazi Germany, you are effectively telling us that you believe that Trump supporters are like Nazis who want to Christianize this country. Uh-huh. They're calling for a civil war, he says, because he saw one tweet on Twitter from a lunatic. The side that said zero when the left were out there burning buildings down and murdering people in the name of BLM, too scared to say anything, they didn't think that that was the start of a potential civil war. They thought it was just, or they were too cowardly to say anything. But you've got some people who stand up for Donald Trump, and they're kind of like Nazis. Uh-huh. This is the kind of rhetoric that is disgusting. This is the kind of rhetoric that creates division, and it sometimes feels like folks want that to happen so that they can then say, see, I told you so. They were turning towards violence. We always knew it was possible. Look at what happened at the insurrection on January 6th that didn't actually include any weapons from the insurrectionists. But you're not supposed to point that out. You're only supposed to say that it was an insurrection. It's not okay to simply say the people who rioted and broke the law should pay a penalty. You have to call it an insurrection or you're part of the problem. And don't you dare mention the fact that all those BLM rioters got off despite all of their violent acts. That's whataboutism. Don't bring that up. Focus on the now, says the people who will do whatever it is they can to target and shame and bully people who actually stand up for Trump. And the funny thing is, I'm not some hardcore Trump supporter. I'm not a MAGA guy. I don't have a MAGA hat. But when I see this kind of bad faith argument, it kind of drives me absolutely just wild.
Angry enough to make sure that he is never again undermined by a general or by anybody else on the staff. Next time, there will be loyalty checks. He will make a list, and he will appoint thousands of officials who will make their lists. And based on having visited countries run by leaders like this and being told to wipe my fingerprints from a phone I had just used, I know you don't want to be on a list like that.
Uh-huh. It's weird. He's not talking about the Democrat Party, because if you veer off of their prescribed views that you're supposed to have, including pretending that men and women are not different, that there's no difference whatsoever, pretending that we're not in a recession, pretending that science doesn't matter, that words don't matter, pretending that BLM isn't a violent movement. If you don't get on board, oh boy, you are not considered loyal, and they go after you whenever they can.
So should a Trump restoration become a possibility, I'm just saying it wouldn't hurt to spend an hour or two scrubbing your social media feeds while you can.
Uh-huh.
I will certainly be scrubbing this commentary along with any fingerprints. The last thing you want is to be scrambling for the delete button as you hear the knock on the door.
Weird. It just feels like the cancel culture has been pursued by folks on the left who, if you say anything online, even 20 years ago, a joke that was deemed acceptable at the time, you should get canceled now. It's not Republicans who are doing that, Dave. And if you want to go ahead and wipe your Twitter clean of any of the tweets that you've had that have been anti-Trump, or if you want to go ahead and delete all your past commentaries, go for it. Because after this commentary, with all due respect, that's exactly what it deserves, to be deleted.